everyone, and welcome to Minor League Monthly here on YesNetwork.com. I'm your host, Lou DiPietro. Now, there are still a couple weeks left in the big boy Yankee season, but we've reached the end of the line as it relates to the Baby Bombers, so this final edition of MLM for 2014 will take a look back at the year that was and a look ahead to 2015 in the system. There's no better place to start for that than in Trenton, where this year the Thunder failed to reach the postseason and did not have a chance to defend their Eastern League title, but they ended the year on the upswing thanks to the influx of several up-and-coming top prospects. At some point during the season, they got Luis Severino, Jaron Long, Greg Bird, and Jake Cave, all from Tampa, and late in the season they got Dante Bichette Jr., who had a revelation season in Tampa after two tough years in Charleston. He hit 271 with 9 homers in 107 games with the T-Yanks before being moved up, and got his feet wet, as so many have, in the Eastern League before the end of the year. And now to talk more about Bichette and those Thunder, we welcome in one of the members of that Trenton beat, in Matt Cardos, who writes for the MLB Blog Network-affiliated Rolling Thunder blog. Matt, welcome to Minor League Monthly. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Lou. Thank you for having me.
So, it was a tough year for the Thunder, didn't make the playoffs to try to repeat as Eastern League champions, but got a lot of reinforcements throughout the year, starting, we'll start with Dante Bichette Jr., came up at the end of the year. He had struggled for 2 years in Charleston. The organization moved him up to Tampa. He had a great season and finally came up, and Tony Franklin said he saw a lot of positive things. Starting with him and moving on to, you know, Greg Bird, Jake Cave, other guys who came up towards the end of the year, they seem to have a lot of building blocks in place for a successful 2015.
Yeah, absolutely. Dante came up, and the one thing about Tony Franklin, I'm sure as a lot of people know, he's not shy about putting young kids in big-time situations, and when he feels that he has a prospect that has a bright future, he's going to play them consistently, regardless if they struggle or not. And Dante had a great first half of the season. Majority of his season was in Tampa. 9 home runs, and I believe he had 64, 65 RBIs for Tampa, and he had about 270 there. But he was just begging to be promoted with the first half that he had. And the fact that it took him that long to get to Trenton was pretty surprising. We were waiting for about a month to get the email that he was coming. And once he did get there, he didn't hit very well. I think he hit about 220, 225, something like that. But the fact is that he got his feet wet, and Tony played him every day. I think he was there for about 18 games. And before he got hurt at the end of the year, and he went on the inactive list for the last couple weeks of the season. But he played well, and the biggest thing, like you said, is getting his feet wet, because that's kind of been the trend that the Yankees have used the last couple of years in the system. They'll bring the guys from Tampa up. 2 years ago, you saw Tyler Austin came up, Trent was in the playoffs that season, so he got his feet wet for about 10 games. Last year, you had Gary Sanchez and Mason Williams come up to get their feet wet for a couple weeks, and then, of course, in the playoffs, kind of to pave the way and give them a starting point to know what they're getting into when the season starts again in April.
And we saw that a couple years ago as well in 2012 with Tyler Austin came up for their playoff run to kind of get his feet wet. It seems to be the MO of the organization. So maybe with that said, was it possibly more of a function of Bichette's hitting so well in Tampa, let's see if it continues before we move him up? Was there, you know, a need there? Rob Segedin came back and forth between Trenton and Scranton a little bit. Was it more? Do you think it was more of a function of let's wait and see and make sure this is for real? And once Eric Jagielo came back from his injury down in Tampa, it was full speed ahead for Dante.
Yeah, I think it was actually a combination of both things. I think the fact that Rob Segedin started the year so hot and carried that into probably the middle of June, end of June, there was really the fact is that Segedin probably should have went to Scranton a lot sooner than he did, and the fact that they both stayed put once Segedin earned the promotion up to Scranton, I feel like it was the right time to move Bichette up. And the fact that he just tore it up in Tampa, I felt like he had nothing left to prove there. So I feel like it was a combination of both Segedin going up and the fact that he deserved the promotion. I don't think it was just a matter of bringing him up and say, let's see what he could do at this point. I think he earned the promotion there. And like you said, those guys that come up at that point in the season usually do struggle a little bit, just because you're coming from a league where pitchers get by on fastballs and you kind of just sit on the fastball in the Florida State League, and if you can hit the fastball, you thrive. But when you come to the Eastern League, when you have guys like Henry Owens pitching you backwards or guys like Kyle Crick pitching you backwards on a night-in and night-out basis, it's a tough adjustment, and it takes a lot of guys 2 or 3 months to make that adjustment and to realize how pitchers are going to pitch you at this level. So the struggle is no surprise for him, but he absolutely deserved the promotion, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, as crowded as that third base situation was with Gigailo in Tampa and Bichette in Tampa, a lot of them DHing while they were both there and healthy, the outfield in Trenton is very crowded, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, you seem to think that Mason Williams is coming back. Tyler Austin didn't have a great season. He's going to the Fall League. You wonder if he'll start 2015 in Scranton. Like Slade Heathcott was supposed to this year before he got hurt. You know, you still have Ben Gamel, who you voted on your blog, and the Trenton Thunder, I should say, immortalized as the OxyClean Dirty Uniform Player of the Year. You had him as your MVP. You also have Aaron Judge, who had a monster season between Tampa and Charleston. He's going to probably start in Trenton. Taylor Dugas started in Trenton and moved up. It's a crowded situation. What do you see happening there next year with so many outfielders and so little room?
It's funny you ask that, Luke, because I was actually thinking about that at length for the last few days. And I honestly don't – I think a lot of it depends on what the organization does in the offseason as far as their additions to the major league team. And, you know, there's always going to be those kind of journeyman veterans who they sign for depth and kind of stick in AAA as almost like a 4A type of player who – kind of dominate AAA on a year-in, year-out level and have kind of traveled the league, but they're always major league depth. We saw, like, you had Russ Kanzler in Scranton, that type of guy. So I think a lot of it depends on what the Brian Cashman and the Yankees do when they go out in the winter. But it is a really interesting situation because, like you said, Tyler, the thing that makes Tyler Austin very interesting is the fact that they played him in at a variety of positions. So he could possibly play first base at some point if needed. But he had a great second half of the season. I think there's no doubt that Tyler Austin is going to start in Scranton. He kind of came back from the DL and he tore it up for the last 2 months of the season. I think he finished the season over a 270 average when he was hitting in the 230s, 240s for the majority of the season. So I think Tyler Austin is definitely going to start in Scranton. But the biggest thing for me is the lack of development of Mason Williams. And he's really only had one prominent offensive season, and that might be even putting it nicely. Right now, he is major league ready defensively. There's no doubt about that. The kid's a stud in center field. But in the position that you're putting him in as a leadoff hitter and your center fielder, he just doesn't get on base enough to warrant putting him in AAA. He hasn't proved that he could adjust to the pitching at this level, never mind an advanced level where guys are back and forth from the major leagues just about every day.
Right.
So you're going to probably have to start Mason Williams in Trenton by default and hope that he kind of catches fire so you could bring him up in the first 2 months of the season and put him up to AAA. But then, like you said, you still have Jake Cave, who was awesome once he came up from Tampa to Trenton. You have Ben Gamel, who, as you alluded to, was my MVP of the Trenton team. And it's not even that he was the most talented player on that Trenton team. It's the fact that he's that type of player that you could throw out there every day and know what you're going to get. He played the most games, had the most at-bats. He was the most consistent player all season long. He led the team in hits. And he's just that gamer that you know what you're going to get from him day in and day out. And he gives his all, which is why he was the OxyClean Dirty Uniform Player of the Year, because he just gives his all out every play. So he's another interesting player. I would think he's going to go to Scranton too. But then you could go back to the Scranton outfield. You still have a guy like Ramon Flores, who absolutely tore the first 2 months of this season up and then was out for the rest of the year. He's another interesting player. His bat control is phenomenal. So you just have all these outfield prospects. And the biggest wild card in all of it is, like you said, Slade Heathcott, who everybody thought this would be the year that he would come back healthy in April and May and tear it up and go to Scranton by June or July. And he only played 5 games here in Trenton and had to undergo another surgery. And so you don't really know what his status is this year or for any year really moving forward. And he's actually on the 40-man roster, so they might have to make some kind of decision regarding his future. So it's a really interesting situation. I think a lot of it is going to play out, though, how the organization decides to move around players during the winter. But I think a few guys, like I said, I think Tyler Austin and Ben Gamel for sure will be in Scranton next season. And I think you have to pencil in Mason Williams
Jake Cave. And like you said, I think Aaron Judge, barring some strange circumstances, is going to start there too.
And that maybe speaks to, you know, the Yankees simply chose to designate Zoilo Almonte for assignment prior to September 1st rather than bring him up and use his roster spot for Antoine Richardson, who had a good season in AAA but was kind of one of those depth outfielders that you spoke of. Mm-hmm. Before we let you go, Matt, we want to switch, obviously, to the mound. We can't leave that out.
Of course not.
You know, Trenton has had great pitching the last couple years. Luis Severino came up in the middle of this season and was electric. And Jaron Long as well came out of nowhere from undrafted rookie free agent to the Thunder's choice for the pitcher of the year. And you agreed. The two of those guys seem to be the top of the rotation next year. What do you see beyond that and perhaps in the bullpen? You know, the Thunder this year had Danny Burrowa and Mark Montgomery for a while, who had been bouncing back and forth between AAA and AA. What do you see as the state of the Thunder in the rotation and then in the bullpen going into next year?
Yeah, Luis Severino is, I think the perfect word to describe him is what you used, electric. I had never seen him before he made his first start after the All-Star break for Trenton. And you obviously hear all the things that the people say in Tampa, and you hear all the things that people said about him leading into the Futures game about how electric his stuff is. But especially me as a writer, I don't ever like to put a label on a player or go along with any kind of labels until I actually see a guy for an extended period of time with my own two eyes. And he is every bit of what people say he is. He is a top of the rotation prospect, and he was unbelievable in his time in Trenton. He only made four starts in Tampa. And that's pretty incredible. It's essentially making the jump from low A to double A, barring aside from four starts. And he thrived at that level. So I think, like you said, I think Severino will start next season in Trenton, but I think he's going to move very quickly. And I wouldn't be shocked if you see him at some point in the big leagues late next season, maybe possibly the September call up, or as we've seen this season, pitchers seem to be dropping like flies these days, especially in the Yankees organization. So he wouldn't be the worst option to rely on at that point. And then you go to Jaron Long, who is probably the polar opposite of Luis Severino. He doesn't have the stuff. He doesn't really have the repertoire of a Severino, but he just manages to get the job done. And I think the most remarkable thing about Jaron Long is his control. He hits spots. Probably, I think he's a lot. I think a good comparison to Jaron Long is a lot like a guy like Vidal Nuño. He doesn't have the stuff, but he relies on the corners, and his control is pinpoint, and it's impeccable, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of that can be credited to the fact that he's a 4-year college guy, so he has lots of experience pitching, and I think that speaks volumes to him, because at his age now, he pitched 69 innings for Trenton, and the kid only walked 11. I think he walked 21 for the whole year. So for a kid in AA to have a walk ratio like he does, that's going to make you successful. Beyond that, though, there's a few interesting guys that I haven't gotten to see personally, but I'm interested to see next season how Clarkin develops down in Tampa. I haven't got to see him, but he's coming off a great year. And I think at some point, probably mid-season next year, I would think Clarkin is going to be a good addition to the Trenton rotation. But like you said, as far as the bullpen goes, Mark Montgomery, he did really well for Trenton. He had an ERA under 1. I think it was 0.83 or something along those lines. But just even, I mean, Brian Cashman's on record as saying that the stuff is severely diminished and the velocity is way down. And Tony Franklin acknowledges that just about every day, that his velocity isn't where it used to be. But I think it gets to the point where if results are results, I don't really think you could worry about the velocity. And if the guy's pitching well, I think that he warrants a chance. So I would think he's going to start in Scranton where he started this year. I think he's worked himself back pretty well. And I think he's just going to try and build up that velocity to the point where he could be a major league option next season. I honestly thought when he left Trenton, I believe it was 2 years ago, he had the nastiest slider I think I've ever seen. And he still does. His slider is still good, but it doesn't really set up hitters as well when you don't have the velocity to complement it. But I think he is, if he could get the velocity even up a few ticks, I think he's an absolute major league option. And then Danny Burrowa, as you alluded to too, he's another guy who I didn't think I would see back here in Trenton after he left last season. He kind of became the closer at some points last season when the departed Tommy Canley, who another guy who the Yankees, both Barawa and Canley, were eligible for the Rule 5 draft last year, and they were both left unexposed. And the Yankees had really big concerns that they'd lose both of them in the Rule 5 draft. And only Canley went to Colorado, and he had an excellent year for Colorado. Very similar pitchers, similar velocity and similar stuff. And Barawa started in Scranton, and he just didn't have a good year. It seemed like his confidence was gone and his control was gone. And he pitched very well for Trenton, but you could just tell that he didn't have that, like, mentality to go after hitters the way he did even a year ago. And so it just looks like it's a matter of a confident thing with Danny Barawa, and I don't know exactly what that is. And he says that, I've asked him about it, he says he hasn't really lost any confidence. He's just not throwing strikes the way he used to. And I guess he gets frustrated and kind of is like a domino effect and just keeps spiraling out of control for him. So I think that's why the Yankees opted to send him back down to Trenton, just to kind of work out those control issues and to get his confidence back so he could start next year in Scranton and hopefully, like Montgomery, be a major league option again next season.
Well, that certainly worked a little bit for Dellin Betances, who went from AAA to AA a couple years ago, and now you've seen what he's doing this year. And Mark Montgomery had drawn comparisons to David Robertson with that slider. So pretty good, couple of pretty good guys to kind of have the arc going towards. Matt,
yeah,
good stuff as always. We thank you very much, and we can't wait. We'll talk to you next season.
Thanks, Lou. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Once again, that was Matt Cardos from the Rolling Thunder blog, and you'll be able to catch more from Matt next season on YesNetwork.com, as he'll be contributing some select Thunder goodness to give you even more of a firsthand look into what's going on down in Central Jersey. Now, as Matt alluded to, 2015 is certainly going to be a season to watch for the Thunder as the team reloads for another run at the EL title. With all those guys coming in, though, they had to come from somewhere, and that somewhere for most of them was Tampa. Now, the Tampa Yankees unfortunately fell a few games short of the postseason, coming up just short to Daytona in the FSL North Division's second half. But even with the in-season exodus, as well as the probable loss of Aaron Judge and a few others next year, they should also quickly reload thanks to some guys who had strong seasons down in Charleston and even lower in the organization. To speak on that, we turn to another friend of the program, PinstripeProspects.com founder and editor Robert Pimpsner. Robert, welcome to Minor League Monthly, and thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So the first question for you, the Yankees had a strong draft this year, and a few of those guys were in Staten Island. Who really stood out to you as the cream of the crop from who came through Staten Island?
Well, some of the best prospects I've seen from this year's draft has got to be Connor Spencer, the first baseman, literally two at-bats away from setting a new team record for highest batting average in the season. And he was just named the player of the month for August for the New York Penn League as well, where he hit over 400 in the month. And he was a guy that was very exciting to watch. And he was one of four guys in the All-Star game in Brooklyn this year for Staten Island. Other guys, I would say, from this year's draft, Matt Wallerstein has been really dominant out of the bullpen for Staten Island, as well as second baseman Ty McFaulin. Now, McFaulin, who knows, he added a lot of errors, because this year it had him play second base, but he's naturally a third baseman. So he's just getting used to a new position.
As we saw with Rob Refsnyder up in the system, though, if that's the case, if it's a new position for him, if he can hit and the bat translates, they're willing to live with that a little bit to see where the defense goes. In terms of a little further up in the system, you know, you've gotten a chance to see working mostly in Staten Island some of the guys that are in Charleston and further on up the line now. And one of the names that Matt Cardos mentioned earlier on the program was Ian Clarkin, who came through a little bit of the lower system and then started in Charleston this year. What kind of progress did you see out of him, and what do you look for him going forward in the future?
He's definitely going to be at least the number three starter, maybe one or two. And he's going to rocket through the system. He's really good. I can't wait to see him in the big league Yankees. I expect him next year to start with Tampa, and we might see him have a mid-season call-up to Trenton, depending on how he does.
Based off of what the Yankees drafted this year, there was a lot of collegiate pitchers. It seemed like a safe draft in terms. And then in the international free agent spending spree, the Yankees inked a lot of players. There's a new rookie league affiliate in Pulaski coming next year in the Appalachian League. There's two teams in the GCL. There's Staten Island. Are there guys that maybe this year, without knowing for it, that have been around in the Charleston and down a little bit lower for the last couple of years? A name like Austin Awney comes to mind, who's struggled at a few levels. Are there guys that have been maybe fighting for their spot in the organization with what we saw this year?
Yeah, there seems to be a real crunch at the lower levels, as there always is. There's a ton of guys coming over from the Dominican Summer League as well. It's something that's really going to put pressure on these guys to fight, and they have to play hard to get their to stay in their spot.
Last question we have for you, Robert, is just with all that pressure on the mound, there's a lot of college pitchers drafted. Who do you think are a couple of guys that maybe in 2015 at the lower levels didn't necessarily have as strong of a year as they could have, but 2015 is maybe going to be the year where they, because of that roster crunch, they prove themselves and either move up or this could be the end of the line?
Well, the guys I will look for, especially that were in Santa Ana this year, guys like Jordan Cody, who not many people realize has played this season hurt. He had a back injury where he's having some trouble with, but I don't think anyone ever mentioned that publicly. And a guy like David Palladino, he was drafted last year, he's been sent out last year. This is a guy, ball pitcher, about 6'8", 6'9", and can really throw. He has a great fastball, usually around 95, 96 miles an hour. And you can compare him a bit Dylan DePontis, but he definitely has the stuff to be a starter. And if you look at his splits, he's done so much better as a starter than he has as a reliever in his career. And I definitely keep an eye on him. He's a guy to watch.
Well, as they say, you know, it's September, but spring training is always right around the corner. We'll see what these guys bring and then what extended spring and maybe either an assignment to Charleston or Staten Island in the GCL bring for them next year. Robert, we thank you for coming on. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next season.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Robert Pimpsner of PinstripeProspects.com. And like with Matt Cardos earlier, you'll be able to see more from Robert and his crew as they are now an affiliate of YesNetwork.com and will be covering the entirety of the minor league system next year. Now, with them covering the entirety of the system, that means they'll also have a lot of news on the guys who are headed to the Arizona Fall League this year. The AFL season begins October 6th, and the Yankees will be sending 8 players to the desert this season. On the position player side, it'll be Greg Bird, Aaron Judge, Eric Jagielo, Tyler Austin, who returns after only playing a few games there last year because of a wrist injury, and catcher Kyle Higashioka, who recovered from Tommy John surgery to get into some games at the end of this year at Tampa and Trenton. On the mound, they'll be sending a trio of righties in Alex Smith, Caleb Cottom, and Brandon Pinder, and all 8 of them will look to showcase themselves the way that Vidal Nuño and Peter O'Brien, for example, did last year. It's a weird circumstance that 3 of the 8 players the Yankees sent last season are no longer in the system, but it's also a speaking point to how Nuño and O'Brien showcase themselves, the former for a major league job early in the season, and the latter is an even more versatile trade chip that went out and got the Yankees' Martin Prado at the trade deadline. Way back in spring training, we talked to a few of the guys who came from the AFL last year about their experience, and one of them who had a really big season is lefty James Pezos. Pezos had a 1.74 ERA in 10 and a third fall innings last year, and he credited that experience as a big catalyst towards a 2014 season where he split between Tampa and Trenton, posting a 2.42 ERA and 75 strikeouts in 67 innings, all while putting himself firmly on the prospect map.
The Arizona Fall League, you know, obviously only a handful of guys get to go out to Arizona every year, and the Yankees picked you as one of those. What was that experience like, and what did that help you work on during the quote-unquote offseason?
The Fall League was awesome. That's the greatest thing I've ever been a part of, baseball-wise. It was great being around people like Fred Lewis and Peter O'Brien, people like Mason Williams, who are at the top of their game right now, and it's kind of cool to see how they do things and how their mind works. I got to talk to Fred Lewis a lot, and he helped me with the game of baseball, and you know, in more ways than I could even imagine. But it was just a great experience, you know, getting out there. And it was a little bit of a grind because it was, you know, part of the off season. But I mean, once you get to the field and once you're around everything, it's not even a problem being out there.
As a lefty, did that help you having Fred out there, like just to kind of compare notes?
Oh yeah, it was. He helped me every time I pitched. He would help me with something, you know, whether it be the mental side or the mechanical side. He was always there talking to me, and if I ever had a question, he would always be there to help me.
Now, you had a little bit of time in Charleston last year as well as in Staten Island. So, you know, you kind of got to see a couple different levels and then the AFL. How do you think that helped your development to kind of move up that quickly and see different levels of progression in 1 year?
Well, you know, I was only in Staten Island for, I pitched one game, and I spent the year before in Staten Island. But that jump to Staten Island to Charleston wasn't really a huge jump coming from college. But from Charleston to the Fall League was an incredible jump, and it was pretty cool to see that I could kind of compete with those guys, you know? So it's a big confidence boost.
Just the last question for you then is, for those that may not know much about you other than you are a Yankees prospect, what would you say is your signature or your best pitch? What would bring you to the table right now?
I'd have to go with the fastball. You know, that's got to be my go-to, and that's, you have to have that pitch that you think that you can beat anybody with, and for me, that's that fastball.
Pazzo's future in the organization certainly looks bright, and hopefully for the Yankees, all 8 players they're sending west this fall can find the same success, both in Arizona and beyond. And that, my friends, is unfortunately going to do it not just for this edition of Minor League Monthly, but also the 2014 Minor League Monthly season. Special thanks go out to Matt Cardos and Robert Pimsner for their insights this month. All of the players, coaches, and media relations staff members who helped make our entire season possible, and especially to my producer, Doug Williams, who puts everything together for your listening pleasure each month. We'll be back in 2015 to put the spotlight on the best and brightest Baby Bombers as they travel down the pinstripe road to the house that Ruth built. But until then, I'm Lou DiPietro saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the spring.